Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. There was a lot of rain in April. There was so much that Environment Canada issued some warnings for our area. A total of 81.3 millimeters fell during the entire month. Just last week, a flood watch was extended for the Rice Lake shoreline. So what's going on? On today's show, Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority hydrologist Corey Harris will explain it. He will talk about water levels and why, despite some good weather last week, West Northumberland continues to experience issues. He will also explain how development, climate change, and other factors play a role in the current conditions. As well, he will help shed light on all the fancy terms experts use when discussing floods and water levels. Have a listen and see if this doesn't help you understand the flood watches and warnings taking place. I'm so pleased to have with me today Corey Harris, Watershed Services Coordinator for the Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority. Welcome to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks, Rob. I'm glad to be here.
What is the current status of water levels within the GRCA watershed?
Current levels are reasonable, and there's kind of two parts to this. The river systems that drain from the Oak Ridges Moraine down into Lake Ontario, they're within normal levels at this time. We do have a part of the watershed that drains to the Trent River, and includes a shoreline of Rice Lake between Beaudley and Harwood. Those levels are elevated, and we've currently issued a flood watch for the Rice Lake area.
As the recording of this interview, it has not rained in several days. Why is there a need to extend flood watches along the lake shorelines, yet everything else is normal? How does that work?
Well, I guess we can thank Mother Nature for some of this. But the way that this works, it's really the science of hydrology. So in the main part of our watershed, we're kind of tucked between moraine and Lake Ontario. The temperatures are warmer. While we had significant rain at the end of March, our watersheds responded more quickly and earlier than those watersheds to the north of us, some of which still have snow. When we're dealing with Rice Lake and the Trent Severn, that is an incredibly large drainage area. So one of the main issues is they still have snow. They've had a lot of rain this spring, like almost twice what they normally get in March and April. And then you've got the snowpack, which has been ripening through March into April and is starting to let go, and the rain on top of that snowpack has made a big impact. But the delay is really an issue of geography, so we're not seeing some of those effects of the melting snow until several days later. So that's why you're seeing you're hearing about flooding in Minden. Those flows are now coming down into our part of the world here in Northumberland, and that's why we're seeing flood levels go up in Rice Lake and in the Trent Severn.
For those who are not familiar with the GRCA, can you tell us a bit about it and what it does overall?
Certainly. The GRCA has been around for 80 years, and this area has a rich history in the formation of conservation authorities. One of the first watershed studies in Ontario was done in the Port Hope area on the Ganaraska watershed. That was done by the province in 1943. The report that came out of that actually recommended the formation of conservation authorities in Ontario. And in 1946, the Conservation Authorities Act was passed, and that gave municipalities and local communities the ability to request the formation of a conservation authority. So our mandate started out with watershed restoration, restoring a lot of those areas that were badly eroded in the headwaters of the Ganaraska, replanting areas to stop erosion, and that's kind of the genesis of the Ganaraska Forest. The report recommended the creation of a forest. When we had Hurricane Hazel hit Ontario in 1954, the mandate was expanded to include managing natural hazards. So that includes not only flood forecasting and warning, some of which we're talking about today, but mapping out these natural hazards, things like flooding and erosion along rivers and creeks, as well as shorelines. And then out of that came a regulatory system to identify those areas and move or recommend that development be placed outside those hazards so that the taxpayer is not paying for restoration of property and, kind of rescuing people in a time of need. So the very robust system in that area, but we also do things like stewardship. We have an extensive tree planting program, and we also manage drinking water source protection as part of the Clean Water Act in Ontario. And then we also monitor the watershed, not only for forecasting flooding issues, but we monitor water quality, and we report on watershed health so that people know how the ways in which we're using the land, what impact is that having on our waters?
You mentioned the word stewardship. Just for our listeners who may not know what that means, could you explain that, please?
That stewardship is essentially taking steps to restore the land and manage it in a way that I think is respectful of environmental and ecological features. Some of that stewardship is managing issues that arise on the land. But a lot of it's related to tree planting. Back in decades past, working with landowners to put in grass waterways on their farms so that their farms could drain to local water bodies without erosion being an issue and losing all that topsoil. So it's a pretty broad area of work, but I'd say largely tree planting and just restoration of impacted areas.
You've mentioned the term watershed a number of times. Again, for listeners who may not understand what a watershed is, could you explain what that is and how it works?
A watershed is essentially the land base that drains to a river or water body. You'll often hear the term watershed divide. That's essentially the line. If you could draw an imaginary line on the landscape, if rain falls on one side of the line, it goes to one creek or river, and if it falls on the other side, it goes to another. A great example of a watershed divide in our area is the Oak Ridges Moraine. That's one of the highest points of land across the top in Northumberland. And so on the south side of the moraine, a lot of that drainage and runoff is going to Lake Ontario. And when you get on the north side, it's going to creeks that drain to the Trent River.
So if you could outline in our minds the boundaries of the GRCA, what would they be?
Our watershed boundary extends from, if you were to go along the shoreline of Lake Ontario, it extends from Newcastle over to just east of Cobourg, right around where Alma Caldeman meets the lake. And then it extends from the shoreline of Lake Ontario up to the Oak Ridges Moraine. And then we've got a little piece of the Trent system on Rice Lake there that goes from about Beaudely until right about Harwood.
How does a watershed work in terms of water flowing? You alluded to it earlier when you were talking about outside our area impacting, and then you talked about the lake and then creeks and other features. Could you give us an illustration or an example of how, when it rains or when it snows, how all this works and how it all flows together in our area?
I guess one of the main things to think about when you're looking at a watershed is the hydrologic cycle. And I'm going to take you back to grade 10 geography. The basic premise is that when we get rain and precipitation on a watershed area, it can fall across the entire area, either uniformly or in a localized way. But the upper parts of the watershed, we call those the headwaters. So a lot of these are nice small streams, some of which are groundwater fed off the moraine. They have small drainage areas, and those, drain into larger systems kind of in the middle portions of the watershed where the creeks are more defined. That might be a bit wider. And then as you get closer to the lake or the outlet of a watershed at the bottom end, you have a larger drainage area. Again, the rivers or creeks will get larger in size, larger in cross-sectional area, but they're often flatter. The slope is reduced. So you may get material from the headwaters moving through those middle reaches. And anytime you get a rain and there's a good flow in the stream, you'll see sediment moving through these systems. And then you get to the bottom end of the river system where your slopes are flatter, and you'll have a lot of that sediment depositing in areas and maybe creating more shape and diversity of fish habitat and other things. But I would also speak to the soils in a watershed play a huge, huge role. So when you get a rainfall, the rain's going to fall onto your soils. They're going to infiltrate. And then the soil reaches a point where it gets saturated. And any rain above that becomes runoff. And that runoff then makes its way down into the streams. And that's what creates the flow in the streams, in addition to any groundwater inputs.
You mentioned a bit about trees and grasses. We often talk about development having an impact. And part of the work that I know you guys do is to look at developments and see the kinds of impacts they're going to have on the flow of water. Can you outline for us how development impacts the ability of a watershed to handle the flow of water?
In development, it has impacts, and I guess the most pronounced impact is that it interrupts or impacts that infiltration process, allowing water to get from being rainwater falling on the ground and then getting into the soil and infiltrating into the soil and eventually becoming base flow or groundwater. When you pave over an area of soil, that infiltration stops. And so that slow process of letting the ground have a good drink and then that excess water turning into runoff, you get rain on top of a development area, it's runoff immediately. So the volume of water that gets to your local stream, as well as the rate and speed that water reaches the stream, is changed drastically. And so there's ways that, when you're planning a development, there's ways to mitigate those impacts by, things like getting water into the ground where it falls. So you can do bioretention areas and, rain gardens, that kind of stuff. But the conventional approach has been to use a stormwater pond. So when rain in your subdivision drains to the street, it goes into the catch basins, into the storm sewers, and those will often discharge into a stormwater pond, which then stores that water, allows any of the sediment to settle out so that it gets cleaner, but it also stores it and releases it at a rate that's close to what the natural rate would have been before the subdivision was developed.
I'd like to go back and talk a little bit more about flooding. How much can you control water levels? Do you have any tools that allow you to slow things down, speed things up?
In terms of our creek systems or the rivers, I think the best tool to mitigating flooding or reducing the impact of flooding is to maintain those impervious areas those pervious areas to allow water to get into the ground. So when it rains, letting that get into the soil. That's certainly the best and most cost-effective way of controlling and managing water levels. There's obviously historically more so, there's dams that were created to mitigate and control those flows to a certain degree. But in a lot of cases, we're somewhat at the mercy of Mother Nature. And we're kind of seeing that now with Trans-Severn and what Parks Canada, the work that they've been doing this spring. It's a good example because they have an extensive area to manage. And if you look at the Halliburton, all the lakes and reservoirs in Halliburton, as well as through the Kawarthas, those dams that were created were put in originally for logging purposes to float timber down the river. They're not flood control structures. Parks Canada they have a team of experts that do a fantastic job of planning for these types of events. And actually, they've been working for weeks in advance to get water levels down in some of those reservoirs before the snow actually started to melt and we got those big flows. So they have tried to capitalize and make available as much storage as possible to reduce the impacts of flooding downstream. So while it's improved the situation, it's still dictated really by Mother Nature in a lot of cases.
What is the responsibility of people who live in the watershed to help create a viable floodplain to manage water levels?
I would say the responsibility is to learn and inform yourself, as best you can so that you know what to expect in the area in which you live. Something we've always advocated for is encouraging not only landowners, but realtors to reach out to us and check the mapping for different properties before anyone makes a purchase so they know what is the flood potential on this property. And it becomes an issue of managing expectations. So once you're aware of the flood risk, you can make good decisions on how to protect yourself. It may be, if you're rebuilding something that's in a floodplain, you can now set your new floor elevation above the flood level. You can set your window openings above the flood level. You can, be aware of if you need sandbags, where would you get them in a flood? Have an emergency preparedness kit for you and your family. So I'd say those are probably the most useful and effective things that people could do.
What role do farmers have in managing floodplains?
I'm not sure they have a huge role in directly managing floodplains, but indirectly, it's an incredibly important role because they are land managers and stewards of the land. And so the way that farmers manage their land has an impact on the local creek and the local river. And when you drive around Northumberland, you can see that local farmers do an incredible job of managing land. You see a lot of cover crops. You see a lot of winter wheat that's you know, protecting soil and keeping it in place. And you don't really see erosion. When you drive on different parts of Ontario, you often see active erosion occurring, you know, especially on construction sites and areas where there's just not that awareness of how important it is to manage the land and protect your soil and be good stewards.
It seems like we are getting warnings more frequently in recent years. Does flooding occur more often these days?
It does occur differently. And like I've been in this field for 28 years, and I've seen a difference in how flooding has occurred. And I don't know that it's more frequent, but the intensity of some of the storms has definitely changed. As an example, all the conservation authorities and the Ministry of Natural Resources have a rain gauge network that we share data and connect on a regular basis to talk about flooding and the forecasts that are coming. But the network that was set up originally for that rain gauge network was based on hurricanes. So the spacing is in the ballpark of, you know, one gauge every 75 square kilometers. The types of events that we're getting today, and we're seeing more of this, they're much more localized and intense, and they're not getting captured by the rain gauges. And a great example of this was the Burlington storm in 2014. The storm was very intense and very localized and went between two gauges. So when looking at the numbers that of rainfall at those gauges, everything was fine. But close to 8 inches of rain fell in the areas between. So how do we deal with those types of storms going into the future? And I think one of the things we're going to have to consider and make full use of is relying more on radar than rain gauges. So there's definitely a change in the types of storms that we're seeing. And I think the approach for forecasting and warning for these types of storms is also changing.
What is causing this change?
What the research is showing is that there is a connection with our changing climate. And I'm not an expert on climate change, but I know that based on some work that we've done here at the GRCA, we've seen in the data that and some of the, you know, the model projections of climate is that things are going to be warmer. We know that weather's going to be wilder, and things will be considered wetter at different times of the year. Like we're seeing our spring melts sometimes in January when typically they're supposed to be occurring in March. So there are tangible changes that we're clearly seeing, and it does all point to a changing climate.
I'd like to take a moment and put this into a bit of a larger context. Do you stay in touch with other conservation authorities during floods?
Absolutely. Whenever a conservation authority issues a message, we share it with all other conservation authorities, so we know what each other is doing. A great example of this is how we work together with Parks Canada and the Trent Severn Waterway folks. During the spring melt and just this season of flooding, we have weekly conference calls with Parks Canada, with the Ministry of Natural Resources, and with all the conservation authorities within that Trent Severn system. And when it gets into the busy time where we're seeing a lot of flooding occurring, sometimes we'll have 2 to 3 meetings a week just to keep each other informed and make sure our messaging is consistent and that we're all collaborating effectively.
We have the Lower Trent Regional Conservation Authority next door to us in the eastern half of Northumberland County. Do you stay in close touch with them, especially because of the geographic proximity?
We do stay in touch with them fairly regularly. I guess most of our watershed drains to Lake Ontario, so we only have a small piece that goes to the Trent. So we probably connect more regularly with our neighbors to the west, the Central Lake Ontario Conservation Authority folks. Like we have very close working relationships, and we often will share staff just to make efficient use of resources. So there is a lot of collaboration and dialogue between conservation authorities.
When you look at all the flooding taking place in Ontario, what kind of impact will this have on Lake Ontario? Will we see something similar to 2017 where the Coburg Beach was submerged, or how high do you expect it to get?
I guess the answer I would give there is the experts on Lake Ontario are the folks at the International Joint Commission. They have a team of experts that monitor the Great Lakes Basin and look at dam operations for the outlet of Lake Ontario. And I know if you were to look at what's happening for us regionally, we're significantly, we're dealing with an above average spring here. And that's clearly borne out by what we're seeing in the news and on social media and the significant amount of water coming down the Trent. But the Trent Basin is about 20% of the area of the Canadian side of Lake Ontario. So while we're experiencing some significant issues for that basin, I don't think that's repeated in all basins. And the forecasts that have come out from the folks at the IJC is they're saying that water levels are up a bit, but the forecast for the coming weeks, because the weather has improved, the forecast is actually quite reasonable. Right now, the Ottawa River, it just peaked earlier this week. So once those flows have made their way down to the outlet, I think you'll see the water levels in Lake Ontario start to drop in the coming weeks as well. It's just, I think they're holding back a bit to make sure that flood pulse that's coming out of the Ottawa River Basin, which again, it's an enormous basin. Once that flood peak is out and water levels start to recede downstream in the St. Lawrence, then the flows will being released out of Lake Ontario will increase. But we will not be, from what they're saying, we will not be approaching the 2017 or 2019 levels.
We've talked a lot about the water levels. Do you have any hard numbers that might illustrate just how different this year has
been? Sure. In terms of, just out of interest, in terms of rainfall levels, when looking at a couple of our rain gauges, and I'll take, we have a weather station at Canton. Normally in a month, we'll get in the order of 70 millimeters of rain, so about 3 inches. For March, we got close to 4 inches of rain. And then for the first 20 days in April, we're already approaching 4 inches of rain. So our rainfall levels have been above normal. Above average. If we look at the levels in Rice Lake, they're elevated certainly, but they're not approaching like the elevations that we were seeing in 2014, which would have been roughly 187.3, 187.4, we're down below 187.2 meters. So it's above average, but it's not approaching those record numbers that we saw in years past.
What do you expect to happen over the next days and weeks?
I would expect, based on the forecast, that things will continue to dry out nicely, that we'll see a bit of rainfall. I think the forecast for the next few days is maybe 10 to 15 millimeters. Now that the soil has been drying out, there's capacity for infiltration in our watershed soils. So I don't think we're going to see much of a watershed response for those smaller events. In the larger systems for the Trent, though, there's still snow in parts of Haliburton. So that snow is going to continue to melt. And because of the work that Parks Canada has been doing with letting some of those lakes come up and creating that storage earlier on in the spring, they now have to let that storage be released through the Kawartha Lakes and down the Otonabee into Rice Lake and out the Trent. So that's going to take some time to basically allow those waters that have been stored in those upper reaches to make their way down the Trent system. But I think, over the next couple of weeks, levels will start to return to what we would normally see.
Corey Harris, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you, Rob. It's been a pleasure.
That was Corey Harris, Watershed Services Coordinator for the Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.